Welcome to another edition of Moment Expression. I'm your host, Tom Perry, tonight. And today's show, I'm kind of excited about. I've got two guys on with me that have not been on Mormon Expression before. And first, I'll start off with my co-host or my interview co-host guy, Al. Welcome to Mormon Expression, Al. Thanks for joining me, man.
Hi, I'm really excited to be here tonight with you.
Al is not naive to Mormon Expression. He's been a longtime listener and a fan, and he's also a contributor over at Mormon Expression Blogs. Why don't you take a few minutes, just real briefly, Al, and kind of give us a background of yourself.
Sure. So I've been a member all of my life. Come from good pioneer stock on both sides of my family. People part of membership since almost the fundamental parts of foundations of Mormonism. I went on a mission, and I was am married to my wife of 15 years, and she's still very believing. And I've recently kind of fallen away from. I still attend church on a regular basis, and I still plan to, but I no longer believe, and that is mostly due to the guest that we have on this evening, Brian Dunning. He's also known as the Skeptoid. So we'll introduce Brian and bring him in. Brian?
Is that my cue?
That's your cue.
So, Brian Dunning?
Brian is an author of several fictional and nonfiction books. A software developer, an avid volleyballer, pilot, car racer, jeeper, sailor, and likes to drink beer and watch TV. That all comes off of his website, so I just wholeheartedly just
wow. I might need to revisit that website.
Yeah, maybe we should ask you what you don't do, Brian.
I don't surf. I'm the only guy in my neighborhood who doesn't surf. Yeah, I have a healthy respect for sharks in the ocean, and so I don't go in.
But one thing that Brian is most famous for is his podcast called Skeptoid, a critical analysis of pop phenomenon, and his work in the skeptical community. Brian has just recently come off of his 250th episode, and is one of the big reasons I changed my ideas about Mormonism. So really interested in hearing his story. He has some background in Mormonism as well. So anything you want to add other than a non-surfer there, Brian?
Yeah, well, I'm basically a science journalist, and my podcast, Skeptoid, as you mentioned, it's generally one of the higher rated podcasts in the science sections of iTunes. 250 episodes, and I do a different short subject each week. Generally, things in popular culture that people believe that's not true, includes urban legends, all kinds of conspiracy theories, alternative medicine, all kinds of stuff. I try to do something new and interesting each week that anyone can enjoy, whether you have a background in the science or not. So it's a fun show.
Yeah, I've totally enjoyed every one of them so far. So can you give it? We're going to jump right in, and can you give us a little bit of background on your involvement with Mormonism?
Yeah, I was. My family was. My mom was always and still is very Christian, and for a while, she was trying to get our family interested in some kind of a church, and I guess the only one that kind of stuck was the Mormon Church. We had some family friends who were into it, and they kind of got her into it, and so I was dragged kicking and screaming to church every Sunday. To this day, I cannot dress up in nice clothes on a Sunday because I'm terrified that someone might think I'm going to church. That's the psychological damage that I've heard. I had no problem with Mormons per se. I was never a believer. I always thought religious beliefs were silly. And so I was just kind of forced to go against my will. However, I did make great friends in the church, and I went to BYU for a year. I got they gave me some full scholarship, and so I went there for my freshman year. I had a great time. I skied a lot, $8 lift tickets at Sundance from the Morris Center. That was nice, and I had some friends with cars, so we got around, had a good time, and a lot of good girlfriend experiences there. I had a very typical college experience, and by the time I got back home from my first year, I guess my mom had had some kind of a giant falling out with the local church ward, and they were no longer attending church, and so I kind of went to from there on to UCLA, UC Irvine, and kind of never went back. Mm. So I am a foreman. I am not a bitter one, simply because I never really got into the doctrine so much.
Sure.
I mean, it was just an association of friends for me.
Yeah,
and, some of whom I'm still good friends with.
So do you think, so we're in Mormonism, we're big into records. Do you think that we could still find your name on the list somewhere and we could send the Mormons over to you, send some home teachers over?
You probably can. I actually have been baptized twice.
really?
Yeah, I was, I guess when I was a little kid, when my family first joined, I guess I was junior high or something along there, I was baptized normally along with the whole family. And then I guess it must have been after my time at BYU, I got back in touch with some friends who were attending film school in Los Angeles with me, and I just became good friends with them, and for some reason ended up getting kind of rebaptized because I had left the church for a year or two in the interim, and come to think of it, I don't know why I went through and got rebaptized. That seems odd. I guess
that is odd.
I must have had some kind of a relapse or something. The year that I was at BYU in Provo, at that age, I think hormones are probably the most powerful influence on
sure.
the body.
Sure.
And so I think I did get pretty into it for a while for the sake of a girl. And
I had an episode of that once where I decided I liked country music for a little while. And
nice parallel.
So I'm sure I'm in the record. Someone's got two baptism records for me, and they're looking at them going, what the heck?
But seriously, Brian, the whole time that you kind of were raised in the church, sort of, you went to BYU, you never really kind of grasped the doctrines or the religion or the beliefs. You were just kind of always a skeptic at heart, always?
Oh, I think I grasped the doctrines. I mean, you know, you can't go to BYU without getting the general story. I mean, you have to take the religion classes and all that. And, you know, I had been, like I say, I had been dragged kicking and screaming. So I had been going to church for, I don't know, 6 or 8 years. So I certainly understood everything about it. But I think I was always, except for, you know, a few relapses, I was always skeptical of any kind of religion. I mean, it wasn't just Mormonism and the whole Joseph Smith story and the whole Book of Mormon story. It was religion in general, just seemed to be very goofy.
So you never really had that moment where you're like, yeah, I think I'm going to stop believing now. You were just kind of always, it was a kind of a downhill gradual thing for you. You just kind of slid your way out.
Yeah, I never had the moment you're talking about. No, I never like reflected and looked at the belief system and found contradictions and said, intellectually, I can no longer do this. I know people who have that story. I wasn't one of them. I was never there to begin with. So I never really had the moment to confront.
So Brian, let me ask you. So what do you, if you were to label yourself now, would you label yourself agnostic, atheist, agnostic atheist, deist?
Well, the word you just mentioned, label, is the reason I don't do that, because
right.
any of those labels means different things to different people. I simply say that I'm religious.
Irreligious.
I say non-religious.
Non-religious.
And if someone wants to call me an atheist, an agnostic, whatever they want to say, you know, that's their word, not mine.
Mm-hmm.
Because I used to tell people I was an atheist, and I found that most people hear that, and they think that you run around with babies on pitchforks and, you know, trying to convert religious people into disbelief, which I don't do at all. I very much have a little outlet. People want to believe whatever they want to believe. That's fine, whatever floats your boat. So I'm not out trying to convince anyone to disbelieve anything. I'm simply non-religious myself, and I'm quite happy being there.
So, but you label yourself as a skeptic. So can you, for those out there who may not have heard of skepticism or the skeptic movement, what can you give us some words about what a skeptic is?
Yeah, I did label myself skeptic for the first few years that I was doing my show, and I've kind of gone away from that. And again, for the same reasons, it's because the word skeptic has such a negative connotation.
Yeah.
I'm a science journalist. I'm not trying to be evil about anything. I'm not trying to tell anyone that they shouldn't believe this. I'm trying to bring the wonders of science to people. And that's an inherently positive message. And the words skeptic and atheist are inherently negative. And I don't roll that way, and I don't like to be perceived as rolling that way. So I don't label myself a skeptic. It's tough because the name of my show is Skeptoid.
Yeah.
But if I could go back in time, I would probably choose a different name for the show. So, yeah, what skepticism is from my perspective, it's scientific skepticism. It's the intersection of – this is a great definition that a friend of mine made up. It's the intersection of science education and consumer protectionism, helping people to understand the facts of the way the world works for real so that they don't get ripped off and they can make better decisions about the way they live their life. And that's why it covers all things like alternative medicine and conspiracy theories so well. You know, even going as far as you know, ghost stories and urban legends like you might see on Mythbusters and things like this. All the stories that you heard about, gee, that was really weird. You know, what's the Sargasso Sea all about? And what's Bigfoot all about? And what about this Betty and Barney Hill UFO story? What actually happened with those? So I am thrilled with search for knowledge and finding things out and love to research those and find out what actually happens. And I try to bring the appreciation for the real facts to people through my show. So it's very much not about a negative message that people would usually associate with the words skepticism and atheism. Mm.
Yeah. How do you feel? I mean, because I've listened to quite a few of your shows. I'll just go ahead and get it out of the way right now. I think you do a phenomenal job with your podcast. Absolutely phenomenal. I would highly recommend that podcast, by the way, skeptoid.com. But you, as far as I can tell, you haven't touched on religion much. You do hit on these more, I guess, real or real important topics. Well, I guess ghosts don't really count. But sometimes you take topics that cause a lot of people problems, like, I don't know, like homeopathy or some
sure.
of the herbal
that's a sacred
crops.
Cow.
Yeah, but you hit those topics, but you don't hit religion much. So when you come on a podcast that's about Mormonism, do you just kind of roll your eyes like, ugh, this has got to be the worst one to talk about?
No, not at all. Not at all, because I love talking to people, whether they're religious or not. I love, you know, trying to share the fun that I have with learning about science. I try to share that with everyone, so I'm happy to talk with any audience, and I often do. I get invited onto paranormal podcasts and radio shows where they are fully ghost and UFO believers and everything else. I've spoken in front of religious audiences. It runs the gamut for people who I want to talk to. I did in the early days of my show, I actually did go after religion in a few shows. And I attribute that, I wouldn't do it now. I attribute that to, I was new to the whole scene myself, and I was trying to figure out what my show was going to be about because I didn't really know yet. And I just said, oh, well, gee, Richard Dawkins and everyone, oh, they're all doing this. I guess I should do the same thing. So that's why you'll find some religious episodes in my early shows, but it's not the kind of thing that I would do now. They still have the transcript up on the website, but I've actually gone back to the second edition of the books, and I've actually taken those chapters out. Again, because I don't want to offend people. I want people to, you know, appreciate the fun and exciting positive episodes that I've done. I don't want them to be stuck on the negative episodes that I've done.
Yeah, well, you know, frankly, I appreciate it. So you have done two on Mormonism.
Yes.
in the past. And I was just going to ask, so why do you hate Mormons? I'm just kidding.
I think there's a fine distinction there, because the episodes are not about Mormonism per se. They're about very specific factual claims within Mormon doctrine.
Yeah.
And in my mind, that does make them fair game for scientific inquiry. In neither one of those episodes do I say, hey, there's no such thing as God and you shouldn't believe in Mormonism. That's not my message at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think that an honest, intellectual, religious person could fully embrace everything I say in both of these episodes and still maintain their religious beliefs. That's what I'm going for anyway. I'm not saying for sure that I succeeded, but that's what I'm going for. So I did one episode on the Mormon history of the Americas, and that specifically addresses the original claim that used to be in the Book of Mormon that's since been edited, that the Book of Mormon was the history of the people living in South America, the American population. And the other one was specifically about the Book of Abraham and its origins as having been allegedly translated from these Egyptian papyri. And those are both very addressable from a scientific perspective. And I got a lot of very positive feedback from Mormons on those, and I'm very proud that I got that. I didn't really get any negative feedback from Mormons. And that's probably because, like your show, probably a lot of Mormons don't listen to my show. I wish they would.
Yeah. I started listening to your podcast when I was doing some really long commutes. And I was really getting into them, really liking them, and I started writing with my wife, and she was listening. Oh yeah, this is great. Yeah, really taking on these wacky medical beliefs and GMO, genetically modified foods, yeah. And how they're really useful to us as a populist. And
so how did it go over when she heard my Mormon episodes?
Then we got to the first one, Mormon History of Americas. And, we had kind of heard that, kind of all our lives. I served a mission in the South, and, I'd heard about, I just kind of, like everybody, and Tom had mentioned this before, just put it on the shelf. Don't even worry about it. We'll figure it all out when we die, and God will let us all figure out. Well, this is why we hid the DNA evidence from you, or whatever. But it wasn't until the second one that you put out did both of us kind of cringe a little bit more. And it was on this really long drive that I really started, because I want to quote something from your second podcast, the Decrypting the Mormon Book, Mormon Book of Abraham.
All right.
Honest Mormons should have grave concerns over the church's continued promotion of the claim provided to, continued promotion of a claim proven to be false. It's time for Mormons with intellectual integrity to demand the Book of Abraham be reclassified as not divine inspiration, and its authorship be properly assigned to Smith, Cowdery, and Phillips. So it was that line about being honest and intellectually honest with myself, and that was when I finally came to the point of looking at it and saying, man, I've just been lying to myself about pre-Columbian horses and genes and barley and the Book of Abraham, and it hurt all my life, and I just decided I've got to start being honest with myself. And so it was that line that really kind of shook me up a little bit and pulled me out.
I'm sorry about that.
No.
Come on, Brian. Isn't that kind of your goal, really, when you were doing that?
No, it is. It is. I often hear from people who say that one episode or something changed their life or got their mom to stop using some alternative cancer therapy and go to a doctor. I get that all the time, and it just could not possibly be more more thrilling and more rewarding to hear that kind of stuff. So I appreciate that, and I'm humbled that you found it useful.
But I think that it's important to say that you especially, I think it was in the first one, you went to great lengths to point out, you know, hey, no, you know, Mormons are great neighbors and they're great people to be around and everything like that, and you know, making sure that it didn't come off as though you were necessarily attacking, and that's a good thing as well.
Right.
I wanted to. Sorry, Al. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, Tom, go ahead.
I wanted to ask you, Brian. You'd mentioned that those earlier podcasts where you do attack religion, and you wouldn't do that now. Why not now? I mean, did you feel like you kind of had an agenda early on, or do you feel like you've just kind of changed, or I don't want to say matured, but what's changed?
Yeah, I think I'm not out to attack anything. Religion is something that exists outside of science. And in my opinion, and I'm more interested in science. My show is not about religion. My show is a science show. So I'm no more likely to talk about that than I am other irrelevant subjects. In the early days, I guess a couple that I did that were the closest ones to attacking religion, was one that I did about how to argue with a young earth creationist. But that was, again, dealing with their horrible, horrible science claims, and how to answer them one by one, point by point. And the other one was about faith, and it was about the people who are trying to prove the Bible, and that's the people who are going out in the desert and trying to find Noah's Ark and doing things like that, trying to archaeologically prove that the Bible is true. And my question was, aren't you trying to marginalize faith by trying to prove that the Bible is true? And the Bible is important because it requires faith. So that was kind of, it was more of a philosophical episode. Mm-hmm. And that's also outside of what I've now decided my show is really about. So, I mean, I stand by it and I still agree with it, but it's probably not a subject that I would choose now.
I liked that one actually myself, the year one. I'm
yeah, a lot of people did, but it's not the direction that I'm taking this show. I think it would be hard for a fundamentally religious person to listen to that show and decide that they want to keep listening, keep subscribing to me, and I want them to. So
sure.
I'm not going to stray into areas like philosophy or politics or religion where I'm going to turn off half my audience. I want to have a show that everyone enjoys.
Yeah, yeah. Some of the episodes that I've really enjoyed are your erratas that you put out from time to time, where you lay out all the problems that you, all the mistakes you've made.
You can't do so much research every single week and put out a show without making some errors. And I think it's important to acknowledge that and to come out and correct the errors when you can. I mean, you've got to have some credibility. You've got to be able to admit when you're wrong and correct what needs to be corrected. So that's an important part of doing science is fixing the errors. That's the whole scientific method right there.
Right.
So those shows are very important, and everyone seems to enjoy them.
And that's the one of the problems that you know, the church kind of has, right, is they can't come out and admit that the Book of Abraham was based on misinterpretation of the scrolls that had come out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I in the episode, I could only guess what Joseph Smith had in his mind. I don't know if he knew he was just making stuff up and just pulling it out of an orifice somewhere, or if he honestly thought that he was translating these papers, which he may have thought, I don't know, but that's not the point. Is to try and get into his mind and try and make a judgment on what his motivations were.
Mm-hmm.
The point is that we now know definitively what those papyri are, and why should anyone pretend that they mean something that they clearly don't? That's a science question.
Right. Yep.
So it's finding the science question that's black and white, that we can learn, that we can test, that we can know definitively. And there are some definitive problems with the Book of Abraham, like the entire thing. So it really does not belong in any book of scripture or being claimed to be a divine inspiration, because that's simply an indefensible scientific claim.
Sure.
What if, how about this, while we're on the subject, what if the president of LDS Church approached you, Brian Dunning, said, "Yeah, I've seen what you've done. It seems like you've got quite the team of researchers behind you." I assume you have a team of researchers, right, for each podcast, Brian?
Not necessarily. Most of it I do myself, but I do have a Google group that I'll send out occasional questions to when there's something that I can't find or something that requires real deep expertise. But okay. I don't use them every week.
Sorry, I digress. Cool. But what if the prophet of the current church came to you and said, "I'd like for you to hear us out and then give us some advice. So, Brian, you seem like a smart guy. What advice would you give us as a church? What could make us successful in the future? What advice do you have for us?"
In terms of what to do with the Book of Abraham or just in general?
Well, let's start with the Book of Abraham.
I'm not the guy to be giving a church advice.
Well,
I think...
Yeah, start off with
the church would be...
Sorry, go ahead. I was talking.
Start with the Book of Abraham?
Yeah, start with the Book of Abraham, and then if you can, I mean, besides just say, "Okay, guys, fold up your doors, you know, close it down." I mean, do you have any different advice, maybe?
Well, the place to have that debate is in the scientific literature and in the scientific community. If someone in the church wants to stick with the story that these were correctly translated by Joseph Smith, whatever they want to do, then that debate needs to happen in a scholarly arena. It needs to happen. They need to present their evidence. They need to publish it in journals. It needs to be peer-reviewed. It needs to be replicated by other researchers. It needs to be endorsed. It needs to be tested. It needs to be put through the whole process. That's how that process happens. If the president of the church came to me and asked how they should deal with a science claim, that's what I would tell them to do. I wouldn't say, "Well, you know, do this or do that." I shouldn't be part of that process at all. I'm basically just a journalist, and that's something that needs to go through scientific channels. It has gone through scientific channels. We do know all of those answers already. So it's really hard for them to do anything else. Switching gears to the other episode, the Mormon History of the Americas, talking about the origin of the peoples of the American continents. You know, of course, that they infamously made that one word change to the introduction to the Book of Mormon. They inserted the word "some." This is the history of some of people of the Americas, and
we just haven't found that one group.
That was really dangerous ground to tread on, because number one, it flies directly in the face of what every single prophet of the church has said in black and white, in non-negotiable terms. Mm-hmm. They have all endorsed it as the history of the original people of the Americas. So that change, that was really thin ice for them to walk out on. It's like, in for a penny, in for a pound. Are you going to go all the way or not? Are you just going to insert that one word and think you've done your duty? No, if you're opening the door to being able to be open to changing and updating and correcting these scientific flaws that are in the material, you got a lot of work to do. You can't stop there. I mean, you mentioned just a few of them, the types of grain, the metallurgy, the species of animals. I mean, there's so much stuff that's demonstrably untrue that book could not possibly be an accurate history of what happened in America. I'm not saying it's not important as a book of scripture. I mean, if someone wants to, maybe it was divinely inspired and all the stories are allegorical. I don't know. That's not a science question. I'm not saying the book needs to be gotten rid of, but you can't call it a literal historical document and start making changes to it unless you're going to go all the way and correct it for real.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've recently, in my mind at least, been recategorizing a lot of the scriptures as maybe not literally true, but can inform us in our day-to-day life on, you know, how to be good people, sort of like if you've read the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You know, I'm not going to take it as literally true of all these events happening, but you can look at the events that happened in in their lives as they went through these journeys. And, you know, it tells a great story that we can learn from, you know?
Sure. Yeah, I have no problem with that. Well, I mean, even saying that, it's like, you know, no church needs my permission to do anything, and nobody needs my permission to believe or they don't want to believe. But it makes all the sense in the world to me for people to place that type of importance on a book of scripture. That you simply it requires too much cognitive dissonance to claim yourself to be an intelligent person who exists in the first world in the 21st century and consider any of those books of scripture to be literal historical documents. There's just too much contradiction there. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel, I mean, we're obviously talking about Mormonism for obvious reasons, but do you feel the same sort of frustration towards religion as a whole, like all religions? Or is there some religions you're a little more sympathetic towards?
No, I'm not non-sympathetic to any religion. Like, again, if you're talking about just the religion aspect of it. But comparing the Bible to the Book of Mormon, for example, now the Bible was written 2,000 years ago, whenever it was written. And so it's not full of the gross mm-hmm. historical errors. It's probably made up of a lot of stories that may or may not have happened, and it's full of all kinds of miracle things that, you know, we can't prove and we can't disprove. But there's no, you know, there's no erroneous metallurgy and genetics in it. The Book of Mormon is full of that stuff. Right. The Book of Mormon is of basically fraudulent authorship, and the Bible is not necessarily.
Right. We can go find the architectural evidence when it exists that backs the Bible verses.
Well, except for I guess for some of the Old Testament claims, those are up for debate, aren't they?
Well, like supernatural ones or
no, well, the historical ones like Noah.
Jews in Egypt. Jews in Egypt is a big one. From Genesis, the whole thing, right. The whole Exodus story. Gosh, was it the Exodus story or was it the Genesis story?
No, Exodus.
I'm mixing my books there. yeah, I mean, that was another episode that I did, which was fascinating research, by the way. It was what is the actual history of the Jewish people and Egypt, and it's nothing at all like what's depicted in Exodus. There were no Jews in Egypt in any appreciable numbers, certainly not at the time when any of the great Egyptian works were being built. The only Jewish settlement, the earliest Jewish settlement around, they were great allies to the Pharaoh. And they, in fact, had Egyptian slaves. So it's the truth of what happened with the Jews and the Egyptians is, you know, virtually upside down from how it's presented in the Bible. But, you know, at least there were Egyptians and there were Jewish people. The Book of Mormon just invents whole people. It invents nations and things that demonstrably don't exist.
Do you find yourself, going back to a little bit about what Al was talking about, taking the scriptures or even the Book of Mormon as a metaphor or an allegory, do you think that that's a safe thing? Would you encourage that? Like if you came up to an active Mormon or an active religious person and they said, well, I can continue in my participation in my religion because I can take it as a metaphor and that brings me peace. Do you get just as frustrated with that approach as you do with like the fundamentals, the ones that literally thought all those things that happened in scripture are true?
No, I think that's a much more healthy way to go about it. I mean, there's people who base their lives on Star Trek, and for whom Star Trek is a church, but they don't actually think that it's real. But they might well take certain philosophies. They can go through their lives wearing the uniforms. Fine, but as long as you're not actually believing that it's real, then you're still existing within our world. You know, you haven't left the planet. And you have to do that. It all comes down to cognitive dissonance. You know, it's believing that we live in an earth where you can pick something up and drop it, it hits the ground, and believing that things are controlled magically. those two things just they just simply don't go together. But you know, again, I go back to one is outside of science. So if people want to believe that things happen magically, that's fine. We can't convince them otherwise. So you know, at least accept what we can learn about the world.
Well, Brian, have anything else you want to add?
Let's see.
What's going on next with you as far as your plans to take? You've got 250 down. Are you planning on for another 250, or you think you're going to hang your hat pretty soon?
Oh no, I don't have any plans to hang my hat. I've got about 300 episodes in my folder.
Oh, excellent!
That's going to keep you busy for another 5 or 6 years at least. I'm hoping a business model arises at some point because this is a lot of work. and it's still not what I'm able to do full-time professionally. I'm working on, I'm doing a big push this year. I'm going to try and be doing my podcast and all the related projects full-time by the end of the year. I'm also working on a video series. I take some of the most popular episodes, and I make 3-minute videos out of them, and that's called In Fact, and it's online at infactvideo.com. And that's a fairly new project, and it's going really well. I hope to become better at making videos because it's a lot harder than making audio podcasts. Other than that, I just hope people keep listening to my show, skeptoid.com. Subscribe today.
Well, let me throw one other production that you had that I really like, and I've given out to several of my friends is the Here Be Dragon movie. I really like that as a great introductory to, you know, you might want to think twice about that thing that you're swallowing or that.
Yeah, it's an introduction to basic critical thinking, how to analyze the things that are all around us in daily life, whether they're advertising, whether they're stories that your friends are telling you across the office, how to separate the solid from the silly, and just the basic tools that everyone should have in their toolkit to recognize what's real and to properly analyze things. It's a free 40-minute video. It's at Here Be Dragons Movie. What is it? Here Be Dragons Movie.com. Yeah. I should do my own URL.
And I think you can find them all on YouTube as well.
They're all on YouTube, yeah. And you can, if you want a physical DVD, you can download it and burn it for free, or you can buy it from Amazon.
Yeah, I had some friends who bought, have you seen this Easy Water? It's supposed to be a water softener, and the salesman came out and he tested their water and said, "Yep, you have hard water." So they plugged in the Easy Water thing and said, "Yep, now it's all fixed." And so I asked him, "So did he test the water afterwards to see if it had become softened?" And they said, "No, he told us right up front that it would still test the same. It's just that the electrons were lined up, so it didn't cause bad things to happen or something like that."
Wow.
And,
yeah.
And I pulled out that the next time I was up there, I brought up a copy of Here Be Dragons to, you know, give to him. And it was like, you know, you got to think things through. You know, if they tested it this way, they have to test it again to see if there was a change. If there was no change, they did nothing.
There are many such products on the market as that. Many of those water filter products cost, and if they cost more than $20, they're a scam. A water filter is a water filter. There's just not that much to it, and it filters stuff out of your water. These big fancy machines costing as much as $8,000, this one brand that I investigated, they're simply full-on scams. They don't do anything at all. You just simply add these mineral salts to your water, and that makes it test a little bit differently, and they have a bunch of electronic circuitry that does nothing appreciable. They make up all kinds of scientific-sounding stories for what these electronics do to your water. They're simply laughable to anyone who's a chemist and who understands the basics of chemistry. Yeah, you got to be very careful of these water machines.
Yeah.
It's an area that's rife with pseudoscience and just ripping people off. People don't have basic science knowledge.
Mm-hmm. This makes me wonder, I hate to go back for just a second, but what are probably one of the more, one or two, the most common things that you're approached with or asked about that's quite easily the most dismissed? Is it like the supernatural, or is it stuff like that? Or I don't know, what's something that's so common you just kind of like, oh, all right, I'll talk to you about this again?
Yeah, it's all medical claims. It's all alternative medicine stuff. Special diets, these magical diets, they come and go so quickly. Last month it was gluten-free diets, and
yeah,
the last couple of years it's been organic food, and it's just kind of recycling these same claims that conventional science is flawed and evil and corrupt and is going to make you unhealthy and it's going to kill you and it's toxic, and our special product is magically natural and wonderful and pure. Mm-hmm. And it just gets recycled so often, and it's so tiresome, and people spend billions of dollars on it, and it just changes, you know, month to month, year to year. It's always the next new thing. That it's not just food; it comes to all kinds of supplement products and magical juices. And it's funny that multi-level marketing schemes are always woven in so tightly with so many of these fraudulent products. They don't hurt anyone. They just perform what we call a wallet extraction. They rip you off for a bunch of money.
I would say that that's hurting somebody. I think if it's
ripped, it doesn't hurt you physically.
I guess
switching to a gluten-free diet, it's not going to hurt you, but it has no plausible chance of helping you or making you healthier or doing anything special for you, unless you're one of the very, very, very small number of people that actually has a gluten sensitivity, which is very rare.
In the skeptic community, one of the things that probably – I know it frustrates those of you that are engaged in the scientific community and trying to promote skepticism, but when you find people who are legitimately suffering life-threatening illnesses that are turning to these alternative medications, these alternative therapies, when all it's really doing is – it's shortening their lifespan here. And that's got to be one of the most just depressing, discouraging things to see and hear, isn't it?
Yeah, it can make me outrageously angry. One of my best episodes, one of my favorite, and it's a fan favorite, was called Despicable Vulture Scumbags. And it was specifically about the friend of one listener who wrote in with a friend who had just been diagnosed with ALS. Lou Gehrig's disease, the same disease that Stephen Hawking has. And he was giving his money to some alternative medicine company for a quack product. It was supposed to be some battery thing based on the writings of early 20th century celebrity psychic Edgar Cayce. Mm. And he was sending hundreds of dollars a month to use this thing that had no plausible chance of helping him. And it was... It's tough because ALS is incurable. He's going to die from it.
Right.
It's going to be a very long, very slow, very painful road, and he's eventually going to die. He's treatable, though. I mean, you can treat it. You can't cure it, but you can treat it. You can prolong his life. You can make him more comfortable, and you can perhaps increase some of his abilities stay with him. And it's so hard for people to go to this person who's in that situation and tell him, stop giving this charlatan your money, because you want him to have hope. That's what people always say, well, if it gives him hope, isn't it worth it? No, it's not. False hope, selling somebody false hope, taking their money to give them false hope that something is going to help them that's not, that's criminal.
Yes.
That makes me outrageously mad. And the other side of that coin is, just because your friend has this disease, and just because he is the victim and he is suffering, That doesn't make him holy or make him give him the right to make it harder on his family and friends. He needs to man up a bit himself and say, okay, I'm at least, if I don't believe I'm going to be treated, I'm at least going to deal with this responsibly because it makes you people feel more comfortable. You can't give him a pass just because he's the victim. And I know that sounds like a mean thing to say, but he's not the only victim. All of his family and friends are affected by this, too. And they want him to be helped, and they're hurt by seeing him get ripped off. And I did an episode about this, and I heard several months back from the guy that it actually worked. They actually got this guy off of it. He went through all the phases. First, he was angry, he was combative, and then he was sorry, and then he was mad. It went through the whole thing, and... But it got him off of it. I never heard what ultimately happened. It was that was a few years ago now. But That was a really emotional episode for me when I did it. I think you can hear it in my voice when I recorded it, and it really affected me personally at a deep level too. So I think that was an important episode. The false hope claim is really, I mean, that's evil.
Yeah,
that's evil.
I tend to agree. I had a friend who was a coworker who had a life-threatening cancer and was in stage 4. And a friend of hers was telling her that she should go to Italy where there's this fountain or pool that if she bathed in, that it would prolong her life or cure her. And she was going to spend the remainder of the money she had and go there and do that. And it just crushed my soul. I didn't even know what to say, frankly. I guess that's why we have people like you, right, to say that.
Well, crying. Yeah.
At least it was Italy instead of the. We can think of some other holes that we can go to.
Yeah.
Maybe you should get a nice trip to Italy out of it.
Yeah.
At least that's not a bad way to spend your final days if there is nothing you can do.
Very true.
But you got to keep in mind also that the loved ones are also affected by this, and you know it's hurting them to see you get ripped off.
Right.
Yes.
It kind of brings to mind the whatstheharm.net website, you know.
Yes. Tim Farley, who's a good friend of mine and a great guy, his website is whatstheharm.net. Whatever the pseudoscience is, you name it, you think of anything. You can think of exorcism, homeopathy, belief in Bigfoot, whatever you can think of. Go to whatstheharm.net, type it in, and it will tell you exactly what is the harm of believing this, with specific examples of actual people who were harmed, killed, injured, taken for money, whatever. And you will never again be unable to answer what's the harm of believing in X, Y, or Z. Great website, Tim Farley.
Excellent. All right, well, Al, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, I'm really grateful to been involved in this and get to talk to Mr. Dunning here.
Well, thank you. It's always good for me to come on and hopefully reach a new audience. I really enjoy doing these.
Yeah, and Brian, we'll be sure to put links to your podcast and some to your books on our website at MormonExpression.com. I'm a big fan. Every podcast of Skeptoid, it always goes with how does it go? It's like, I'm Brian Dunning, in the most level, professional sounding voice. I'm Brian Dunning. Do that for me.
I'm Brian Dunning from Skeptoid.com.
Exactly. That's like a trademark. That's phenomenal.
What's funny is when I was in Australia, hello to all the Australian listeners, and I was at a conference in Australia, and they had me do that. They had me come up and say that. And, man, it was amazing. The audience just roared. That was the most fun they'd ever had. way more than I get from the U.S. audiences. Australia just has some incredible density of people who are interested in science and critical thinking, much more than the United States. It was really a fun trip, and I really like the Australian people.
Excellent. Well, Brian,
mostly because they cheer when I say my little intro.
Well, Brian, I really appreciate the time. Al, I really appreciate you joining me and setting all this up. I think this was a phenomenal discussion. At the very minimum, I think if anybody pulls anything from this, it's increase your level of critical thinking. I think that's a vital important for us as humans, especially to teach our young kids that. That's at least my little plug there at the end. But I'd like to remind everybody that the discussion continues at MormonExpression.com. You can find links to Brian Dunning's Skeptoid podcast there and tell us about what you thought about the podcast and whatnot. But, yeah, thanks again, Brian. Al, appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good night.
I'm Brian Dunning from Skeptoid.com.